Okay, what I'll do, we're going to keep time. I've got a 10-minute countdown timer. I'll give you guys the one-minute signal, okay? And then a hug. A hug and a hook. Okay, first up, we have Denise T. from Regina.
I guess I get to give you a hug.
Oh, sure. So good evening, my name is Denise, and I am glad to be here tonight. I'm also a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I have to tell you, this is the first time, for about the last month, I've been saying I'm a grateful member, because I really didn't really feel grateful for a long time, because I didn't really want to belong to this club, and my ego was getting in the way, right? I mean, I really felt, I felt ashamed about it, to be quite honest. But today, I'm standing here in front of you, and I can tell you that I truly am grateful to be a member. I'm grateful for all the gifts that I've had in recovery and received in recovery, and I'm going to share with you some of those gifts tonight. When I first came to Al-Anon about 3 years ago, I knew something was wrong, but I really couldn't quite put my finger on it. I was stressed out, I was unhappy, and I was having issues at home with my husband and my children. I wasn't living with active alcoholism, but I can tell you that I grew up in a home with alcohol, with alcoholism. I grew up in an affluent family, that the white collar, if you will. So it wasn't kind of the typical alcoholism that you think about, but it was the disease of relationships. The relationship that I witnessed between my parents was one of an imbalance of power. There was power struggles, there was manipulation, and there just was a constant tension in the house. This had an effect on me. My parents had little time or energy, really. They were dealing with this, their own relationship and their own stuff. They were so enmeshed in it, they didn't have time or energy left over to nurture their children. I know now that alcoholism runs on both sides of my family, on both my parents' sides, and really they were just behaving the same way that they had witnessed as children growing up, so I don't blame them for them, and I know that they did the best that they could, and I love them very much. The coping skills, so you grew up in this, and what are the coping skills that you learn when you're a kid and you're exposed to this? So I'll tell you what mine were. A was I tried to control everything. So, you know, when you see that and you see chaos, so what you do is you try to control everything that you can. The other thing that I did is I tried to be a super achiever. I tried to be perfect. I was going to be A1. And all of that was to make myself more lovable, more accepted, and to not be rejected. And maybe get some attention, too. I grew up French Roman Catholic, so there was a few of us. Another coping mechanism that I used was I built a wall around myself. So I built this wall, and I didn't want to share of myself, so I didn't really let anybody in. I didn't trust anybody, and I really didn't let anybody see the real me because I was scared of being rejected, and I was ashamed, really, and I really didn't even know who that real me was. So that was another coping mechanism that I used. Another one, which is a great one, and I heard it mentioned earlier tonight, was showing up as a victim. So I showed up as a victim, and I wanted somebody else to validate me. And that's not a real fun way to live for either the person showing up as a victim or for the people around them. So back to Al-Anon. So when I first came to Al-Anon, I was embarrassed, I was scared, and I was worried about who I'd see here. I was afraid of being judged and viewed as weak, vulnerable, incompetent, incapable, all those things, because I wanted to be perfect, right? So when I came here, I was scared of all those things. But let me tell you, none of that happened. The support, fellowship, and encouragement of people in Al-Anon helped me see that I was pretty okay, that I wasn't alone, and that my attitude and my experiences were pretty typical of people that grow up in alcoholic homes or other dysfunction in the home. The theme of the conference this weekend is the gifts of recovery. I've received a lot of them in my 3 years so far, and I'm going to share 5 of them with you really quickly. The first one is a magic mirror. The Al-Anon program has given me the tools to look at myself differently, to look at myself in a kinder and gentler way. I don't judge myself as harshly anymore, and I'm more accepting of the person that I am. I realize that I will never be perfect, and that my life will never be perfect, and I'm okay with that. Step 4 helped me examine myself and to help me uncover my gifts and talents, as well as my character defects. It's been a process of examination, reflection, and acceptance. I still have a long way to go. I still have work to do, but I'm more accepting of myself today, and I love myself more. And that even just saying that is kind of cool. The second gift of recovery is a new pair of glasses. The writer Marcel Proust wrote, "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in seeing new with new eyes." The Al-Anon program has helped me see the world differently. It's helped me focus on my attention on the blessings that surround me instead of all the things that aren't going well. The glasses enable me to see people in a kinder and gentler way, seeing the good in them versus judging them and criticizing them, which I have been good at. The glasses help me focus on love, kindness, and gratitude instead of judgment, criticism, and lack. The third gift I've received in recovery is a Sherpa. A Sherpa is somebody who helps you climb mountains, right? It's somebody who's gone before you and they can help you climb Mount Everest. Well, I got a Sherpa. My sponsor is my Sherpa. Helped me navigate through the program and guided me along the way. She's shown me unconditional love and support and has been there for me when times were really tough for me and I wasn't very much fun to be around. She reminded me to be kind and gentle with myself. And she was my Sherpa because she shared her own discovery, her own route, right? She'd been there before, so she shared that with me. She also shared her experience, hope, and strength with me. She is a rock star. Get it, rock mountains? The fourth gift of recovery is a cheerleading squad. Besides my sponsor, I have a group of friends in Al-Anon who listen to me, they don't judge me, and they share their own stories and their own vulnerabilities. They show up faithfully every week and are always ready to lend an ear or give me a hug or just be there for me. They are a fellowship of wonderful people committed to growth and recovery, and I am so grateful for all of you. The fifth and last gift of recovery is my GPS. For some people, GPS stands for Global Positioning Satellite. You maybe use it on your tractor. For me, it's a God-powered system. By turning my will and my life over to my higher power or my GPS, I can have faith and trust that things will work out without me trying to control, coerce, manipulate those people, places, or things. I let go and I let God, and I remind myself that things turn out better when I follow my GPS. So those are some of the gifts that I've received in recovery thus far. For all of these gifts, I am so grateful, and I'm looking forward to even more gifts, and I feel like I'm still on Al-Anon Light because it's only been 3 years, and I got lots of other things to explore. I hope that this weekend for you is an opportunity for you to pause and recognize and celebrate the gifts that you've received in Al-Anon. And also, last but not least, I hope that all of us that have received these gifts can recognize and celebrate them and then pass them on to somebody else. So thank you very much for letting me share tonight.
Thank you, Denise. Our second speaker for this evening is Scotty B.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Scotty B, a grateful member of Al-Anon. Let's see, some Al-Anon jokes first off. So, how many Al-Anons does it take to change a light bulb? one, but the light bulb has to want to change. Okay, good, good. And when I came into program, I knew how to point, and they told me that, you know, whenever I pointed, there were three fingers pointing right back at me. So I've learned the Al-Anon point since then, and it's five fingers out. So I don't have to worry about those fingers pointing back at me now. And a lot of people ask me why I come to Al-Anon, because there's no active alcoholism in my present home. But I say, well, I live with cats, and they're just like little furry alcoholics. And people are like, how can you say that? And I'm like, well, when they want to be fed, it's not now, but right now. They're constantly pawing me for affection, and they're out all night, and I have no idea where they've been. So I've got some gifts of serenity that I've been given, and many Al-Anon members have said all of this much better than I did, so I of course just borrow it from them. And I wanted to just thank God for helping me find Al-Anon, and I wanted to thank Al-Anon for helping me find my God. So I got here because if my life had been just a little bit easier, I would not have come to the 12-step program, and my life would have been that much worse off. So I was probably 9 years old when my parents split, and I'd go out to Vancouver, and I'd go see my mom for a couple weeks out of the summer, and they'd have a party, and the party would start about Thursday night, and it would go until about Sunday evening. And during that time, there were people dropping in and going, there'd be bodies kind of just passed out in the morning on the floor, and they were growing marijuana in the backyard, and they'd go out and dry it and get it ready for each party weekend. And so I watched this until I was about 14, and then I went to my mom's condo. She'd bought a condo, moved from the North Vancouver side to the Vancouver side, and wasn't hanging out with any of the people she had hung out before. And I'm like, it was such a profound change. I needed to ask her, like, what prompted this change? And she said, well, I'm going to Al-Anon. And in my head right away, I just thought, well, you married the alcoholic. That didn't affect me at all. So, So it took me 12 more years of research and development to figure out that I belonged in Al-Anon. And I decided to come to a meeting. And so the first night I came to a meeting, it was Sunday, and the church was closed, and nobody showed up. So some other lady came. I'm like, oh, can you tell me about Al-Anon? And she's like, no, this is my first time to an Al-Anon meeting too. So we were just standing there waiting, and then a third man came along. And we asked him if he was new, and he's like, no, I've been in Al-Anon. So he says, it's a new meeting. It's only been open about 2 or 3 weeks. So why don't we go across to the coffee shop, and I'll tell you a bit of my story. And so this man told me his story, and it was so vulnerable and just so honest, and I had never heard anything like this, and I wanted what he had. And so because of that, I was willing to come back the next week to another meeting. If he hadn't showed up and didn't tell me his story, I would never have shown up again. I would have just thought, nope, not for me. So when I came to my first meeting, I go down those stairs, and I don't know why meetings are typically in a basement in a church. I don't know why, but they are. So I looked at all the people smiling and laughing and thought, well, they couldn't have had as rough a life as I had had, because they couldn't possibly know all the pain I've been through. But when they went around and told me their stories, I related just a little bit to each of their stories, and was like, oh my goodness, wow. Like, I can relate on every level, not specific circumstances, but general feelings. I could relate to that. So I had grown up in my own home being the scapegoat, so I didn't feel like I fit in there. At school, I was on the outside looking in. And then at work, it was just kind of like, yeah, not quite fitting in again. So when I got to that meeting and I listened, I felt like I was home for the first time in my life. I felt like I belonged, and I knew I wasn't alone. And that was what really helped me a lot. So one of the people there, I wanted to find out as much as I could. So I went to a lot of the coffees after the meetings, and I actually found out I learned more at the coffees after the meetings than I actually learned at the meetings, because I could ask questions at the meetings and get a little one-on-one help. So Laura Lee had talked to me, and she said, well, find a power greater than yourself. And she said it could be like anything, like it can be a tree, a rock, the stars. But she warned me, she said, if it were a tree and you woke up one morning and the tree had been cut down and you found your higher power gone, it could be a little shocking. So maybe find something a little more permanent. My first sponsor was like a Sherpa too. He was old, weathered, and smelled a little bit like a yak. And that's not true. He wasn't that weathered. So he would ask me whenever I phoned him, he would just simply say, how do you feel? Oh, Dennis, how can you say that? How can you ask me how I feel? So I would work through it, and lots of times it was just figuring it out with him how I felt, because I just didn't know. I heard people sharing in meetings, but I'm like, I relate to that, but I couldn't name them on my own. And he helped me a lot with how do you feel. Talked to Laura Lee again, and she said, be real when you share, Scotty B. She said, look at the floor, close your eyes, do whatever you got to do, but be real and be honest when you share. Back to Dennis, my sponsor. I would tell him the worst, like, what's going to happen? I'd be like, I'd always see the worst case scenario, and he'd just ask me, are you a fortune teller? Do you know what I'm thinking right now? Can you tell the future? And I'm like, nope. And that was one of the most important things that I learned, that any outcome is possible, not just my worst case scenario one. Marnie shared this with me. She said, lots of people pray to God and have questions, and there's always four answers. There's yes, there's no, there's not right now, and there's you gotta be kidding. So a lot of my praying for the pony part, yeah, didn't always work. So gratitude, my current sponsor just says we have so much to be grateful for. So I just keep on working on the gratitude part. I do my gratitude list from A to Z when I do my walk in nature, and sometimes Z to A, just to mix it up a little. And fellowship, I keep going out after the meetings, because I just find that I can isolate if I just go to the meeting and then show up and then disappear. I find that I isolate a bit too much. Now, this doesn't happen anymore, but when I first came in, AA had these dry dances at the Eureka Club, and they were so awesome because there was no drinking, but I got to go dance. I learned to dance there in my own self-centeredness. I learned to just dance like nobody was looking at me, because they weren't. So I was like, okay, good. Got to do that. And it was a really great time. I always had a place Saturday nights to go, because for me, Saturdays are a little bit lonely. I go to an open AA meeting in the morning. I go to an Al-Anon meeting in the afternoon. And then lunch or supper, whatever, afterwards. But the evenings I find pretty lonely. So when I don't make time or make the effort to go out with somebody, I sit at home in my garden and eat worms and just hang out with myself, which isn't always that fun. So I'll say a couple people in Al-Anon I'm grateful to is Lois and Ann for starting Al-Anon. But without Bill and Bob from AA, we wouldn't have our 12 steps. So I'm truly grateful for all of those people. And somebody, when I first came into my first year of program, they taught me this saying. They said, whether it's for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, people come into my life and teach me things, and I'm never the same again. So I will just say I'm not the same person now, and I won't be the same person at the end of tomorrow. So I'm grateful for being here. So thanks very much for listening.
Thanks, Scott. Next up, we have Diane N. from Regina.
Okay, I'm a wanderer, so I know I only have 10 minutes. I'm not going far, but I got to move. Sorry. My name's Diane. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And as my friend Tom often says, it is a privilege to be here at this meeting this evening, and it really is. I have a lot of gratitude for this program. Now, I'm not ignoring you. I'm setting my own 10-minute timer. And it really is just 10 minutes, I promise. This program saved my life. This program saved my life, and that is not an understatement. When I got here, I was pretty broken, pretty broken. Came in skidding sideways, never seen anybody come in skipping through the doors because life was going great. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I figured I had beat the odds. Didn't marry an alcoholic, wasn't an alcoholic. I got a job, I didn't end up in jail. I had the house, the car, the kids, the white picket fence. And I was miserable. And I was dealing with anxiety, and I was dealing with physical problems. When I got here, I was broken in just about every way possible. And you guys just welcomed me in, and you guys let me cry, and you guys made it safe. And I can't express words enough of the gratitude that I have for that. When I started in Al-Anon, I didn't get to the adult children meeting. I was still a student. I could relate, but I couldn't really relate because I didn't live with an active alcoholic. I didn't have kids that were addicts or drinkers. When I got to the adult children room, boy, I found my people. You guys got me. And, you know, you... When I got there and I would tell my story about growing up in that alcoholic home, man, it was ugly. It was mean. It owned me. I couldn't tell the difference, and sometimes I still have trouble telling the difference between the monster that's in my head and the one that's actually under the bed. And so when I would tell that story, I would relive it, and I would feel it in my body. It owned me. And you guys made it safe for me to look at that. And you taught me that I didn't have to like something to accept it. I think Shelley might have told me that once or twice, or 1,000 times. I'm a slow learner sometimes. But she's absolutely right. You were all right. It's an ugly story. There's a lot of shit that went on in my house growing up. I saw my dad try to kill my mom. Not good stuff. And I can tell that story today with all its warts, and I'm okay. Because you guys taught me that this disease is a family illness, and my parents were really sick people. They didn't get to these rooms. I don't know why we're lucky that we got here, but there's something to be grateful for. This is a gift that we get here. And it's even more of a gift if we stay. I came for a while and then I left. After about 4 months, I had this program figured out. I don't know why it was taking you guys 10 years to get this shit. It's 12 steps. It's not that hard. And then the wheels came off and I came back and then I stuck around for a while. So that's been good. And you took me back. You took me back. No one said, where the hell have you been? You just said, welcome back. Good to see you here. And you let me cry some more. So thank God for that. And thank you for that. Anyways, the other thing that you helped me do was really take a look at myself and how I'd been living my life. And I've said this before when I've had the opportunity to share my story is, you know, I see myself as being born into this world with an empty tool bag. And there I came, bundle of joy and an empty tool bag. And my parents went about their task of filling that up with tools for me so I could go out and live my life. And before recovery, I would have told you that my parents purposely tried to screw me up, and what a job they did. I don't think that anymore. They did the best they could with what they had to give, but they just didn't have much to give me. And so you guys said, let's have a look inside that tool bag. And I didn't want to look. I didn't want to look. That first step four was not fun at all. But you guys just said, let's just do it. We'll do it together. We'll get through this. And we did. And what I found out was that that hammer that I had been building my life with was missing the hammer head. It was just the handle. And you can hit stuff with that, but it doesn't work very well. And it's exhausting. And not only did you let me see the broken hammer, but you said, here is a shiny new one. Let's put this in your bag. And so I got some new tools to go out and live my life with. So, you know, these days, whether we're in recovery or not, life happens. Since I've been in recovery, I lost a mother-in-law to ugly cancer. I had a child with a brain injury, got separated from my husband. List goes on. I came to realize that I was married to an alcoholic. Damn it. Right? That wasn't on the list of things I was going to do because I was going to do it all right. Right? You know. And you guys walked me through all of that. And I am so grateful for that because I walked through stuff that I didn't think I could walk through. And I came out the other side because I had you and I had my higher power working through all of you. about 2.5 years ago, the wheels came off after almost 10 years in this program. And I didn't want to go to meetings. In fact, I think one night I was at the Tuesday night meeting and Dan walked in and he said, "How are you?" And I said, "I don't want to be here, damn it." Like, not even hi. I don't want to be here. But I was there because I had to be there because I had the damn key. So, right, my higher power has a sense of humor as well, you know. So there I was. And anyways, I went to that meeting and I connected, you know, with people that I knew I needed to be there. I heard something that made sense to me. I don't really know what it was. I felt shitty walking in, but I felt less shitty when I walked out. So that was a success that night. That was as good as it was going to get. But a few weeks later, I was driving down the highway out to the lake by myself. And I thought, the next semi that comes, I'm putting myself under it. I'm done. I don't want to take another breath. I don't want to take another step. I cannot live like this. And I'd like to tell you there was some major crisis that happened in my life that got me to that point. No, actually. But this is what happens when I don't connect to you and I don't connect to my higher power. My stinking thinking starts going and it was gone. And I'm driving down the highway and it occurred to me something that I heard in one of these rooms, in one of these meetings, probably heard it 1,000 times, and it was, you could ask for help. There's a novel idea. Before recovery, it was really, really hard for me to ask for help. Now it's just really hard. So that's improvement, right? Okay. Anyways, I did. I reached out. Now you have to know, during that time, at that point, my spouse was in recovery in AA. He had been in for about 3 years and he had good recovery, really good recovery. In fact, his recovery was so good, he was making mine look really shitty at that point, which was really too bad because I had a lot of Al-Anon where I was really good at recovering when he was still really sick. So that was okay. But when the shoe was on the other foot, I didn't really like that. Well, that's the truth. Let's be honest. This is an honest program, right? So anyways, I connected with a couple of ladies that I know. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but I think I'm going crazy. And I went back to the counselor who first got me into Al-Anon. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but I think I'm going crazy. Turns out my name's Diane and I am also an alcoholic. For those of you who are new to Al-Anon, trust me, this doesn't mean you're an alcoholic. Just happens to be my story, okay? And the kicker to that is that I'm a dry drunk. I don't actually drink. So yeah, don't worry, that doesn't make you an alcoholic either. So anyways, so I ended up in AA and that is absolutely the last place I wanted to be. I did not want to be an alcoholic. But you guys taught me I don't have to like it to accept it. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it. But you guys gave me the courage to look at that and I did not want to look at that. But I had to do another step four. And boy, that tool bag goes really deep. There's a lot more in there that I had to peel out and stuff that I didn't look at before. But I couldn't have looked at it before because I wasn't ready to look at it. You know, for me, healing has been about peeling layers, layers by layers. And my higher power knows exactly how much I can tolerate at a time. And so, you know, if all of a sudden I had realized that I was grew up in an alcoholic home, married to an alcoholic, and I'm an alcoholic, I'd be nuts, more nuts than I currently am, right? So these things came in bits and pieces, and that's been a gift. So, you know, for those of you who are new to this program, just stick around. Just stick around, you know? People say in meetings, if you don't like it, we'll refund all your misery when you leave the door. You can have it all back if you want. You know, life continues to happen, and I have blessings in my life today that I never dreamt possible. If you stick around tomorrow morning, my husband is going to be one of the panel speakers. He's going to talk about the AA promises, so I won't tell you what those are, but I will tell you that they do apply to this program as well. If you work these steps, good things happen in your life. Good things have happened in my life, and it is because of this program that I started out here. And I don't get too many Al-Anon meetings anymore. When Shelley asked me to speak, I said, which hat do you want me to wear? But you know what? This feels like home. Oh, I'm getting the hook. There we go. I really am getting the hook. Shh. Anyways, I just I wish you all a blessed evening. I wish you a wonderful weekend. This is such a gift just to be able to be here with each other, because nobody understands this disease like we understand this disease. So thank you.
Just want to take a moment and remind you, if you like what the speakers are saying and you can't remember it all, that Scott will have CDs or whatever type of technology available tomorrow. Okay, please help me welcome our final speaker for the 4x10, Carol Lee S.
A little bit shorter than everyone else here. Oops, is this working? There. Okay, I don't have jokes, but I have typewritten notes. Kind of rhyme. Good evening. I'm Carol Lee, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Carol Lee.
I'm also an adult child of an alcoholic. My dad was the alcoholic I grew up with, and even though he died many years ago, the effects of growing up in an alcoholic home still linger. I'll start with a bit about myself and then share some of the many gifts I've received during my ongoing recovery in Al-Anon. My introduction to the family disease of alcoholism started on the day I was born. I don't remember this day, of course, but I've been told that while my mom was in the hospital in labor with me, my dad couldn't stand the waiting, so he left the hospital and went to the club for a drink. One thing I remember most about my dad while I was growing up is that he spent a lot of time at the club. He was a functioning alcoholic who went to work every workday or weekday, but also every day after work he went to the club for a drink with his buddies. Today I have an aversion to these clubs and really feel uneasy about going to one, even for a wedding or a birthday celebration. Dad often promised to take us places, do activities with us, and buy us things. But I think that was a way of making up for his absences. He rarely followed through on those promises, and I learned not to trust. I didn't often have friends over because I was embarrassed of what my dad might say or how he might act. So instead, I spent a lot of time at my friends' homes. I learned to hide. I was a chameleon and Miss Congeniality all wrapped up in one. I was everybody's friend, from the in-gang to the outcasts, and I liked everything anybody else liked. If your favorite color was green, so was mine. If your favorite food was pepperoni pizza, so was mine. If you didn't like country music, neither did I. By being this chameleon who blended in with everyone, I got to know what everybody else liked and disliked, but I had no idea what I liked. I was a people pleaser. I tried to do whatever would make other people, including my parents, happy. I tried to be perfect and get everything just right so my dad would be proud of me. I was seeking praise and positive relationships. While I wanted to please my dad, I did not like that he drank so much and that he was hardly ever home. When he was home, he always had a drink in his hand, and at quite a young age, my dad taught me how to mix his drinks. I think I was under 10 years old. At first, it was cool to be taught such an adult task, but after a while, I resented having to make him drinks. He would just hold out his empty glass and expect me to go make him a drink. But as I got older and those resentments grew, I started taking his empty glass and putting it in the kitchen sink, and I'd walk out the back door. I guess that was my attempt at control, and to try to get him to stop drinking. Then, as my brother got older, he also showed signs of alcoholism and added street drugs to the addiction. Our home became full of tension, arguing, and fighting, and I couldn't stand the conflict, so I found different ways to escape. One of my diversions from the ugliness in my house was hiding in my bedroom closet with a light and a good book. I love to read, and I still do, and I found it easy to let myself become part of the fiction world I was reading about. I wasn't happy, but was afraid to admit it. So at school and around my friends, I always played it cool and pretended everything in my world was just fine. I learned to stuff my feelings. When I was in grade 12, my parents encouraged me to continue post-secondary studies. The program I wanted to enroll in was offered here at the University of Regina, but if I went to the U of R, I would have to live at home. And I wanted to use school as a way to get away from home and away from the alcoholism and the chaos there. I was still the people pleaser though, and I didn't want to disappoint my parents, so I made up some story about that field of study being a flooded market, and I picked a different course offered at STI in Moose Jaw. I moved to Moose Jaw with a friend, and my visits home became fewer and fewer. I achieved geographic separation. In other words, I found a way to run away without upsetting my parents. Unknowingly, I learned how to manipulate and control situations. Not one of my better coping techniques. Fast forward a few years to when I was 28 years old, married, and 5 months pregnant with my second child. My dad would phone me at work every morning to see how I was doing, but one morning I got a different call. My dad had died. According to the police report, he had committed suicide using a lethal mixture of alcohol and drugs, prescription drugs. He'd abandoned us in the most permanent way possible. Again, I felt shame and embarrassment because I thought people would judge me by the actions of my father. I really could have used Al-Anon then, but it would still be a few more years before I attended my first Al-Anon meeting. About 5.5 years ago, I took my first step through the doors of an Al-Anon meeting. It was a good step. It happened when one of my sons was spiraling down into the depths of alcoholism and drug addiction. It just continues. He went into detox, and I contacted a high school counselor I knew. She suggested Al-Anon for me. After a few Al-Anon meetings, I realized I was relating more as the child growing up in the alcoholic home than as the mother of an alcoholic. An Al-Anon member suggested I try the Al-Anon adult children meeting. I did, and wow, did I ever feel like I was in the right place. These people all shared a piece of my story, all of you, and I shared a piece of theirs. This group quickly became my home group, and I've received numerous gifts through members sharing their experience, strength, and hope, as well as growth through my own participation. One of the first gifts I received is the Al-Anon slogans. These were short and easy to remember, and I latched onto those slogans. My favorite one is "Let Go and Let God." But before I could use that slogan, I had to develop a relationship with my higher power, my God. And that's a gift. Once I accepted and acknowledged I had a higher power, it became a huge relief to be able to let go of situations I had no control over and let God direct the outcome, whether the result was what I wanted or not. That's another gift, to not obsess over what I have no control, which is most things. I used to obsess and play out all possible outcomes in my mind, and 99% of my imaginings never came true. Through Al-Anon, I have come to realize this, and also that wandering around in my head alone is a dangerous place to be. Another helpful slogan is just for today, and it helps to keep me in the present moment. And the present is a gift. I can look at the past and learn from it, but I have learned that it is not useful to stay there. It is also unproductive to speculate what might happen in the future. As much as I would like to control the future, another character defect, I am not psychic and really have no idea what might happen. The Serenity Prayer, too, it's like a magic gift. If I'm all wound up and anxious about something, I say the Serenity Prayer a few times and somehow I calm down and carry on normally, whatever normal is. My journey in Al-Anon has been one of self-discovery. I've gained the gift of awareness, especially of my reactions to situations. I'm learning to act instead of react, which is proving to reduce emotions and lessen defensiveness. What helps me here is taking a deep breath and thinking before I speak. I'm nowhere near perfect at this, but I'm a work in progress. There's another slogan, progress, not perfection. To me, learning is a gift. By working the Al-Anon program, I have learned. I have choices. I have a voice. No is a complete sentence, and I can ask for help. I don't have to do or figure out everything by myself. Two more gifts I've received are courage and self-confidence, and these have led to the gifts of higher self-esteem. I've always considered myself as being shy and never was sure I had anything of importance to contribute. I've grown way outside my comfort zone in Al-Anon and have participated in ways I never dreamed possible. Members of my Al-Anon family have given me the gift of believing in me and encouraging me to get involved more. They see abilities in me that I don't see in myself. And getting involved in a safe, non-judgmental atmosphere is such a confidence booster. I'm almost done. I have set out chairs and made tea at meetings. I have served a 3-year term as group rep for the Healing Hearts Al-Anon Adult Children Group and a brief term as alternate district rep. I'm certified as an Alateen sponsor and I'm currently serving as the Alateen coordinator for District 6. And I've done all this without feeling I have to do it perfectly. What a gift. Perhaps the biggest step of courage for me since joining Al-Anon is taking a huge leap of faith and returning to school. That's right. I'm now a full-time university student at the University of Regina, studying to get that degree I wanted many, many years ago. Al-Anon has helped me gain the gift of self-confidence to believe in myself and my abilities. And finally, standing up here in front of all of you doing public speaking about myself, no less, this is something that just the thought of has always horrified me. But I'm here. And this for me is courage. Al-Anon has given me all these gifts, others I haven't mentioned, and all of you as part of my Al-Anon family. Thank you all for allowing me to share part of my story. You are a gift.